Welcome to Going the Extra Mile, a podcast brought to you by New Leaf Training and Development. Each edition is sure to lift your spirit and encourage you in today's working world. Enjoy.
On a recent trip back to England, I took a nostalgic detour through the neighborhood where I spent my childhood. The houses on Overhill Road look smaller than I remembered. Now, they either shrank or I finally grew up. But the memories were vivid. Games in the streets, summers that felt just endless, skateboarding until sunset, and a patchwork of personalities that formed the backdrop of our little world. One memory came flooding back more sharply than most, our neighbour, Mr. Watkins. Even as a child, I sensed something was off about him. He was the kind of person who seemed perpetually annoyed by the mere existence of other humans, children's laughter, an offence to his peace. A bicycle left on the sidewalk, grounds for a former complaint to someone, anyone. He was the human equivalent of a grey, drizzly Tuesday. Out of curiosity on my trip, or maybe morbid fascination, I asked a longtime neighbour about him. Now, to my amazement and some sadness, she told me that he's still there, still angry, still grumbling about the world, 45 years later, and absolutely nothing has changed. That revelation lingered long after my flight home. How does someone stay so deeply rooted in misery for decades? What kind of internal wiring lets someone wake up each day and consciously or subconsciously choose irritation, gloom, and negativity all over again? And then, like a thread pulling taut, it connected with something I've been reflecting on lately, how supervisors and managers, you know, those ones who seem stuck in the same emotional trench. You probably know one. I knew one. Maybe you've worked under one. I did. They led through fear, sarcasm, micromanagement, and an unspoken belief that happiness in the workplace is suspicious. They crush creativity, enforce rules with robotic precision, and really just drain the energy out of every meeting like human mood vacuums. Of course, not all management is like this, but the pattern is so familiar. It's though somewhere along the line, these supervisors confuse leadership with control and authority with moodiness. They became the workplace version of Mr. Watkins, predictably unhappy and convinced the problem was always someone else. Which brings me to a reflection from C.S. Lewis, an author that I greatly admire, that rings truer with each passing year. He wrote about how a habit of constant grumbling, always complaining, always blaming others can actually begin as just a mood. You might recognize it in yourself and wish it would stop, but if left unchecked, it takes over. Eventually, there's no distinction between the person and the grumble. They merge into one, running on autopilot like a machine. Now, in another passage, Lewis offers a powerful metaphor. He says the barriers that we feel trapped behind are often our own making. And more importantly, the lock is on the inside, and we're the ones with the key. It's a sobering reminder that the emotional traps we fall into, you know, bitterness, control, chronic dissatisfaction, often are always imposed from the outside. And often we hold the key ourselves. We just forgot to use the key. And that's what struck me about Mr. Watkins and what I see in certain managers and certain supervisors. Misery, in many cases, isn't circumstantial. It's chosen, it's rehearsed, it's reinforced. And while disappointment, loss, or betrayal may have sparked it initially, over time it becomes a default setting. And eventually the lock isn't on the office door, it's in the way someone thinks. And as a person thinks, so are they, as the proverb says. There's something both tragic and oddly clarifying about that. Tragic because it means someone can spend an entire lifetime being miserable when they didn't have to be. Clarifying because it also means the door to change is rarely locked. We're just not always willing to reach out for the handle and turn the key. Now, in the workplace, we often underestimate the ripple effects of emotional habits. A persistently negative supervisor can stunt the growth of entire teams. But the same principle works in reverse. A leader who chooses optimism, trust, and flexibility, and dare I say love, to love their work and love on people, can actually create an environment where people actually want to show up and contribute their very best effort to their work, put their shoulder to the plough, as it were. And maybe that's the lesson from Mr. Watkins. Misery doesn't evaporate on its own, it grows roots. But so does its opposite, gratitude, hope, patience. And the key to either, it doesn't come with a promotion or title. It's a daily conscious choice about what kind of person we want to be. And that's really what differentiates us to animals, is that we really have free choice. We're able to choose our response to what happens to us and around us. And after all, the lock is on the inside. I pray, if I could use that word, for all supervisors and all managers that have explicit formal authority to choose a better tomorrow. You know, their tomorrow doesn't have to be the same as their past, because they've got freedom to choose in the present. And dare I say, I pray the same for Mr. Watkins as well, that while he's got breath in his body, that he may choose to see a different tomorrow.
I hope you found that short story useful, and if you did, feel free to rate, review, and share this podcast. We'll be back next week with another episode, and we also invite you to check out our other weekly podcast, Take 5, an inspiring interview with a leader worth listening to. Bye for now.